And now, your go-to source for year-round fantasy hockey advice, DFS and betting coverage. This is NHL Fantasy on Ice, presented by Skip, the official food delivery app of the NHL.
With another fantasy hockey season coming to a close, it's time to look at the future, brought to you by our good friends over at Skip. Welcome to another edition of NHL Fantasy on Ice. This one's a good one, our annual prospect slash keepers pod, where we start to get you thinking about your big summer ahead. Nick Alberga, Pete Jensen, and Anadu with you. What's going on, Pete?
What's going on, Nick? Skip, the official food delivery app of the NHL. And yeah, one of my favorite episodes of the year. We spin things forward. Of course, the Stanley Cup playoffs still to come just in a couple of days here, Anna. But we always look at those keeper and dynasty league impact of different players that are namely like 25 years old and younger.
Yeah, we're in single digits until the postseason, guys, only 9 days away. But there's a lot of teams that aren't going to make it into the playoffs this year. They still have some valuable assets, though, Nick, in terms of keeper rankings.
Playing out the string, and I hope Chicago can find some teammates for Connor Bedard. That's all I'll say on that situation. Watching that game on Wednesday, my goodness. As we bring in today's guest, associate editor and prospect analyst for Daily Faceoff, it is Steven Ellis. What's going on, buddy?
Not bad. How are you guys doing?
Fantastic. Thank you so much for doing this. I understand your latest NHL draft rankings are out, right?
Yep, they're out today, and it's exciting because those take way too much work. And then the first thing you see is a bunch of people saying your rankings suck, and that always feels good when you see that.
So I imagine that Macklin Celebrini is number one on that list. I think we start with that conversation. What's your expectation for next season when it comes to Macklin Celebrini? Is he going to be a full-fledged NHLer right off the bat?
Absolutely. I think the one thing we're seeing with him is like one of the best college freshman seasons we've ever seen. And I think, you know, you look at what Bedard was able to do, and if he played a full season, we were looking at him probably getting closer to 80 points this year. I don't think Celebrini's got the same offensive potential as him, because if you're looking at the two from a style perspective, I kind of compare Bedard more to Kucherov and Celebrini more to Crosby. And if you think about that, we're still talking about a guy who's in real life is going to have so much value as a two-way player. Maybe not in his first year, not going to blow the doors on the fantasy side, but I'm so excited about him. You just don't get guys that commit to the two-way game like he does.
Nick, I know you mentioned Connor Bedard and expectations versus reality. They've been pretty close when he's been healthy, Steven. We have to be honest with that, even with not much support around him in the lineup. Given the state of the Blackhawks in a keeper and dynasty league, how high do you rank Bedard? Clearly, he's still behind the likes of McDavid and Matthews and McKinnon and guys like that, even Kucherov, but he's got to be top five in any of those long-term formats, right?
Yeah, I guess the one thing you got to take a look at is if your league counts plus minus, I think it's still going to be a couple of rough years in that end. And I'm trying to decide whether to keep him right now because I have him on my league, but I have to decide my keeper soon. And I only get two, and this isn't a six-team league, so everybody is a star player, basically. So it's a tough decision there. But when it comes to Bedard, yeah, I think, you know, maybe next year I don't think it's going to be that huge breakout year everyone's been looking for, but I think maybe 2 years down the line, he still needs some help, you know. Obviously, you look at the guys he's played with this year, not an ideal mix, and a lot of that young talent that's coming through the Blackhawks system isn't ready yet. I guess the big question is, like, you know, if they somehow do land the first overall pick, and then they've got Celebrini, and then if it's not him, maybe they get Demidov and they're waiting a couple of years, or they get a defenseman like Levshunov to start passing to him. So there's some good options there. But right now, next year is not the breakout year, in my opinion, for him. That's 2 years from down the line when they hopefully get all that help they need.
Listen, guys, I know that Connor Bedard isn't playing in an ideal situation, but I think we need to put a little bit of respect on Filip Kurashev's name, Steven. I wonder what you think about him as a player, because he's impressed me a lot. He has almost 20 goals this season. He has over 50 points. He's not getting much support either, but finds his name on the score sheet pretty much on a nightly basis. So that's a player that I just can't avoid thinking about.
I'm really happy to see this, because he was someone when he was drafted 120th overall by the Blackhawks, whenever that was, that felt like way too low at the time, because I thought he showed some really nice signs in the QMJHL with the Quebec Ramparts as someone who really could kind of take his game to the next level if given the right line mates. And I know people are pointing out like, oh yeah, he's playing with Bedard. That's a big reason for his point production. But there's a reason he keeps staking with Bedard because they could kind of rotate anyone around there. But he also looked good when Bedard wasn't in the lineup there. So I think the fact that they've kept him together is a good sign. Who knows if that's a long-term thing, but you look at the point production this year, and it's not just because Bedard's feeding him everything. Actually, if you look at it, you know, he's got 35 assists this year. He's been really good in that aspect too. So I'm happy to see that because the talent was there. It was just putting the execution together, and we're finally seeing that right now.
Not sure why I'm admitting this, but I spent the majority of my Wednesday night building a franchise in NHL 24 with Chicago. All I can say is, oh boy, that's going to be a tough rebuild, okay? The Montreal Canadiens, you speak about rebuilds. I actually have a couple questions about them. My first is about Juraj Slafkovský. He's really taken that next step. Ever since being put on that top line, by the way, with Nick Suzuki and Cole Caulfield, since January 1st, 42 games, 15 goals, 30 assists, 35 points. I left the prorate numbers over 82. That's 29, 39, around 70 points. What's your projection next season for Juraj Slafkovský?
I think he could hit the 70-point mark next year because, you know, it's the length that he's been producing at this. It's not just been 1 month. It hasn't been 2 months. It's been a couple months here, and that's promising. I do expect the Canadians as a whole to take a big step forward next year. You look at Suzuki having a great year, Cole Caulfield. I think maybe a lot of people were myself included, were a bit premature saying he was going to go out there and get 40 goals this year. But I think everyone still sees that potential for that. And then you throw Slafkovský in that line and you got a lot going there. I think the big, you know, key thing for his production next year is who's going to be playing defense with him and on the ice at the same time. And that could be Lane Hutson. And we know what Lane Hutson's able to do. And his college season could come to an end, or will come to an end likely this weekend. And then he'll turn pro and then we'll see what happens there. But I think with that, it's exciting because, you know, Caden Gooley's a good defenseman, Arber Jacki, guys like that, the solid young defenseman in the Canadian system. But outside of Michael Matheson, they don't have that real puck-moving defenseman that could help produce a lot from the point. And having someone like Lane Hutson there next year could do wonders for that group. So Slafkovský, I do expect to hit 70 points next year. It's you kind of looked at the trajectory of, you know, not a great first season, and then he's kind of been able to bounce back. But, you know, Jack Hughes was kind of in a similar situation, and not that they're similar players, but it was very easy to write him off after kind of the surprise first pick to begin with and then not producing like everyone was hoping he would. But he's showing that he's confident right now. And when you get a guy who could shoot with confidence, it's hard to stop.
Here's a quick hitter for you then, staying on Montreal, that back end, you talk about puck moving defenseman. Who has the highest fantasy ceiling? Is it Lane Hutson, Logan Mayer, or David Reinbacher?
I'm 100% going with Lane Hutson. And I think, you know, there might be an argument for someone like Logan Mailloux because he's a bit more physical and he's got that offensive ability. But you just look at Lane Hutson and, yeah, the NCAA is not the AHL, but you're still playing against older competition. He's a smaller guy. It does not seem to bother him at all. The way he moves the puck, the way he thinks the game, this is a guy who should be getting 50 points a year, no problem. I would imagine 50-ish assists. I think the big thing missing from him is a big booming shot, and that kind of is more because he's not on the bigger side of things. But just the coaches, when it comes to like giving young guys playing time, they want to see just how intelligent they are, how good of a hockey IQ they are. And that sounds a bit cliche, but with Lane Hutson, very few players could do the stuff he does with the puck there. And that's what makes him such a unique, fun prospect. So, I think Lane Hutson's got that. You know, Logan Mailloux, I think that maybe his defensive deficiencies could hurt him a little bit in the NHL. He won't be able to get away with everything like that. But I'm impressed with him. But right now I'm picking Lane Hutson.
Steven, before we hop off this Montreal train, I go on TSN in Montreal once a week. And the big question last week was a debate between who would you rather have in fantasy, Slafkovský, who we just discussed, or Alexis Lafreniere. I feel like that's an interesting one because you see the season that Lafreniere is having right now. He's almost a 30-goal scorer, and he has phenomenal lineup placement on this Rangers team that provides him so much more support than Slav has in Montreal. But the upside for Slav's pretty high, so who would you choose there?
It's an extremely difficult question because I'm on the Lafreniere will get 100 points train at some point. I'm a huge believer in him. I think that just the opportunity for Slafkovský to be more important in Montreal is definitely a thing here. I think also the fact that, at least in the long term, you know, the Rangers are in their contention window. Montreal is just they're still not there yet. So they're going to be getting into that. So I think long term, I'm a bit more excited for Slavkovsky. I think the real thing for Slav is just, you know, being a bit more confident on the physical side of things, because for a guy his size, he could be more valuable if he was just a bit more aggressive out there. But points wise, short term it's Lafreniere, long term I'm thinking Slavkovsky, just because I think that Montreal's offense is going to start to really to wake up here in the next couple of years.
I'll answer that question plain and simple. Slavkovsky, because he'll be on power play one, Lafreniere will not, and Slavkovsky has double the hits of Lafreniere this season. So case closed there. I'll go to the Dallas Stars here. If you look, Steven, the most impressive young forward groups in the entire NHL, Dallas has to be near or at the top of the list, not only with the young guns like Robertson and Hintz, but actually I'm even more excited long-term about this duo that's brewing on their second or third line with Stankoven and Wyatt Johnston. Johnston, at 20 years old, is leading this entire team with 30-plus goals. Is this the best forward core in the entire league from a keeper and dynasty standpoint?
Buffalo's got an argument there, but right now, 100% it's Dallas. Yeah, look at Logan Stankoven. And for me, a big thing was, okay, 5'8", not a big guy. And unfortunately, when it comes to prospects, so much is kind of focused on the player size until they get to the NHL, because you're trying to see, like, will that translate? Clearly, from what we saw in Texas, clearly what we've seen in Dallas, that's not been a problem for him. And that's exciting, because, you know, you look at what Bedard was able to do in the WHL those last couple of years, but Stankoven was like neck and neck with him pretty much the entire time. Different ages, but for a smaller guy that has always had to prove himself, he could play the wing, win faceoffs at center. I talked to him at the World Juniors a couple years ago, and he says he feels really confident as a centerman because his lower center of gravity seems to help him win a lot of faceoffs. And you look at the World Juniors, and he was like the best faceoff guy 2 years in a row. That's a totally different level there. But you look at the fact that you can put him in anywhere in Dallas's lineup and you can feel confident because they've got some good scoring options. Then you got Wyatt Johnston. And I, you know, so many people look at the fact that he was drafted when he was. I was like, oh, so many teams missed on him. I went back and looked at draft rankings. Most people didn't have him inside the top 40. And that was because he missed the entire season outside of the U18s due to COVID. And then he went out and had one of the best OHL seasons I've seen in the last 10 years, and kind of everything else is history there. That is a guy who's super motivated, such an important part of the Dallas Stars team. For Jason Robertson, and, you know, Joe Pavelski might be playing for another 3 or 4 years at this point, the way he's playing. There's a lot to love about this Dallas team. I expect them to be a Stanley Cup contender for a long time. And the fact that they're willing to give guys like Stankoven and then now Maverick Bork those opportunities with a deep lineup like that, that shows that, you know, they're exciting. They're a good group.
And quick follow-up, Steven, is he going to be the leading contender for the Calder Trophy next season? I believe he will still be barely eligible, so add Celebrini to that list. Devin Levi, if he's up with the big club, but again, Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen is there in his way now. So, and then some NCAA guys, maybe Will Smith, maybe Cutter Gauthier. We'll see how that shakes out. But is Stankoven near the top or at the top of that list for you?
I think so, 100%. And he's one of the best prospects in hockey, no question about it, even heading into this season. I think that now that we saw that his play in Texas was the real deal, it's like, okay, yeah, I would not be wanting to bet against him. So I would not be surprised if he hit 60 points next year.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to say the least, and we got to put some respect on the name Jim Nill. Had a scouting background going to Dallas after many, many years in Detroit, has done a phenomenal job, and all while keeping a lot of his first-round picks, which I think deserves a lot of respect in this day and age. Pete, I'm sorry for cherry-picking your question that I'm sure was to come on your notes here, but Buffalo's crease, Steven, very intrigued with this. UPL, since Jan 1, 34 appearances, 2.30, 918, 4 shutouts. Is he rapidly ascending into stardom, or should fantasy owners be apprehensive about trying to keep a Buffalo Sabres netminder?
I think, you know, obviously you look at the team's issues this year, and it's not been because of Luukkonen. Like, he's been playing great this year. There's been other issues with that lineup. I think that it's exciting. It's not someone that just kind of appeared out of nowhere. This was someone at one point who was one of the best goalie prospects in the world. And it felt like it took a while, and it has. When he was playing in Sudbury, all eyes were on him as this guy who could just go out there and just steal games, and they could be outshot, outcompeted, and they would win the game because he went out there and made 45 saves. And he's shown that in Rochester and then now in Buffalo, that he can steal games when he's on it. He's got the size. He's very athletic for that size. It moves very well. So, you know, just from a pure, like, you know, quality of like what you see from him, like, this is the real deal. This is a guy that I think should be a starter in the NHL. And I was making the argument last year that he would be the better option over Devon Levi. And a lot of that, again, comes down to the size factor, and that you know, he didn't have to adjust as much. He's older. He did have that pedigree of being a great guy, a great young goalie. But I love what he's doing there. And the Sabres are a fun team. They got one of the best prospect pools. They've already got some of those young guys that have moved up. They've got Matt Savoy not far away, Yuri Kulich, guys like that. Isaac Rosine, another one I think people aren't talking about. So they're going to be a more competitive team next year. At least we hope so. And I think Lou Okun in there, and then Levi maybe is the backup. That's a good goalie duo. Young, a lot to prove still, but with the potential to steal games, and that's what you need.
Steven, you've come on this podcast at the time of the year where this episode is the only acceptable episode for me to bring up my squad, the New Jersey Devils. So I'm going to give you some rapid fire. I want to hear your thoughts on all these players to give Devils fans some hope, at least in their keeper leagues. Starting off with Luke Hughes, I know a lot of people had expectations for him this season, but there's a lot of things that are flying under the radar. He had the longest point streak among any rookie with 7 games. He has shown upside, especially down the stretch. What do you think about him heading into next year?
You know, the fact that he's put up 45 points this year, having to play such an important role of a lot of responsibility that might have not been there if the Devils had a fully healthy blue line all year long, that's really good. You know, I was looking at him maybe having a 40-point season, so from that perspective, it's better. You know, sure, people will point out the minus being like minus 23 this year, but A, I don't love that stat, and B, you know, he's been so busy this year. He's not putting up Brock Faber-type performances here, but he's not getting the same support that Brock Faber is, I'd argue. So when it comes to Luke Hughes, I was one of the few that kind of looked at the way he was developing and the way Quinn Hughes was developing, and put an argument that Luke Hughes might be the better defenseman long term. And I still think that's very possible. So you'll see what Quinn Hughes is doing there. Might win the Norris Trophy this year, having a fantastic season. I expect Luke Hughes to be in that conversation in the next couple of years.
Big praise. And the other player that I wanted to ask you about, who's honestly put me through a roller coaster of emotions this year, is Dawson Mercer. I mean, I gave up on this guy at some point in fantasy this season. Producer Bob Bender's rolling his eyes when I think this is probably the third time this entire season I brought up Dawson Mercer, just because he didn't perform. And then he ends the year with still hitting the 20 goal mark. So looking forward to next year, do you think it's a bit of a bounce back breakout year for him? Because I thought this season was going to be a breakout year for him, Steven.
Yeah, you know, disappointing, obviously, to see kind of that huge lack of production, especially at the beginning of the season where he was in all my fantasy leagues and then everyone dropped him really quickly because of that brutal start. But I think that's a part of that is also just an indictment of the New Jersey Devils this year. Is he a 50-point guy consistently? I don't know. But I think that he showed enough from a goal-scoring perspective that, yeah, he scored 20 goals this year. I think he should at least be able to do that on a nightly basis. You know, one guy I'd like to see a lot more out of is Alex Holtz, but I guess that's a totally different question here. But when it comes to Mercer, I still think that, you know, next year should be better. I don't think it's going to be a worse production season, but disappointing to say the least.
When you look at the Arizona Coyotes, obviously a big, you know, performance last night, 4-point game from Dylan Gunther. There's a lot of uncertainty surrounding the franchise, whether it's Arizona, Salt Lake City, somewhere else. That's still to be determined as of record time. But when you look at this young core, I mean, with Clayton Keller and Josh Doan and some of these other guys that have emerged, where do they rank in the keeper pecking order among forward groups? There's also Logan Cooley, who's a big deal in fantasy dynasty leagues.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see if, like, Connor Geeky makes it next year, because that's a guy who he's got the size. I think he's like 6'4", throws hits, but he's really skilled, good with the puck. So that'll be interesting too. I think, yeah, a lot of question marks here. You know, will these same prospects be in this franchise next year? Well, like, what's going to happen here? I don't know. A lot of questions there. I think with Cooley, really impressive last little bit here. Someone that First half, you know, I don't think anyone's talking about it even being close to the Calder conversation. Then he gets on this little run here in the last little bit. And, you know, I think it just took a bit for him to get comfortable with the Coyotes, where last year he was one of the best players in college hockey, but he had two very good line mates also to rely on. And with the Coyotes this year, it was kind of just all over the place, probably playing a bit more than he should have with Barrett Hayden out for when he was there. I think that with him in particular, though, a lot more of the value is going to be in the real life hockey because of just how valuable he is defensively, and you're not going to get those stats in fantasy. But there's a lot of, you know, good young pieces in the system here. I know the Coyotes organization is really high on Michael Rabel, the goalie, 6'6" goalie out of UMass. Maverick Lamoureux is going to be one of the most punishing players when he gets to the NHL. I wouldn't be surprised if he's challenging for a spot next year on the team. The question of kind of, are they going to be able to bring over Daniil Boud or Dmitry Simashev in the next couple of years? Again, two more big guys. I think a lot of the value on this Coyotes prospect pool is the physicality. If they could get even just their top five prospects in the NHL, or their top five prospects in the system to the NHL, we're talking about like 6'4", 6'5", 6'6" players who are not afraid to use that size. I think for the Coyotes, we just have to continue expecting them to go up from here, because they're, again, near the bottom of the standings. But, you know, whether that's in a new city next year and that gives them some renewed hope, I don't know. But I think the fact is that they've got a promising young core. It's just, can they attract those free agents to kind of supplement that? You can't just rely on your 19, 20-year-olds to do it for you. But if they can do that, I think that young core, it's a top 10 prospect pool in the league, and I think it won't be long until they can get that to working. But they need a little bit of help.
I tell you, we need to have a Russian spelling bee on this podcast. You against Pete Jensen. I think you would destroy him, man. It, sound pronunciation of these Russian names. And I'll let Pete ask the Ivan Fedotov question. So I'll get to Yaroslav Askarov with Nashville. I think he's a really fascinating file in fantasy hockey this summer because B, obviously, is a year older. And then, you know, obviously, like a guy like UC Saros could get dealt this summer. I know Nashville's in the thick of things. They made the Stanley Cup playoffs. Saros has been great. But how do you view a guy like Yaroslav Askarov, not only for the future, but this summer?
So first off, it might seem like I just love every prospect in the world, but you guys just happen to ask me about all my favorite prospects. Askarov, I wrote before he got drafted that he was going to win the Vezina at some point. Like, I was that confident in that. And I hate saying that about a position that's so volatile, like a goalie. But he just showed signs in the KHL where, you know, you look at someone with a 9.13 save percentage, like, oh, you know, that'd be pretty solid for a young guy in the NHL. But in the KHL, that's like the 35th best goalie in the league. It's a bit of a different world out there. But you have to look past a few things, past those base stats. And, you know, internationally, he showed that he could absolutely steal games. And then he showed that he loved to throw his stick and seemed to hurt his play all the time. But again, to go back to the size thing, he's 6'4", but he's not like a heavy goalie. He's very athletic, great glove hand, and he's so confident. You need a goalie that's, you know, believes in themselves, and you see those celebrations, like whether it be not like doing the push-ups on the net or just kind of these crazy poke checks in these games. He reminds me a lot of Peter Mrazek when he was coming up, and this guy was celebrating everything, having a blast, and it kind of really translated into a really good start to his career. With Askarov, he's the biggest believer in himself, and that's a good thing. It's okay to be cocky if you're a goalie, because you need that guy to believe in themselves in a position where you see a guy like Ilya Samsonov this year, and it was out of his own mind, and he was thinking too much, and it wasn't working out for him. Now he's relaxed and he's playing great, and he might be, you know, Toronto's best chance at going for the Stanley Cup. But when it comes to Askarov, he's been impressive in the AHL. He had one of the best streaks that we had seen on a winning streak in quite a long time. He's got 6 shutouts. He looked good in his spot NHL duty this year. The big question, obviously, is Saros. What are they going to do there? You don't want Askarov going out there and only playing 25 games next year. But I don't think that would happen. If you keep both, which I think is the ideal situation if the Preds think long-term here, you can split them. And with Saros, you don't need him to play every night because you've got this guy you can really rely on down there too. Fantasy-wise, it's probably a couple of years before he's the true number one. But in real life, I think that he's got a good opportunity here.
since we're talking about goalies and we're talking about Russians, I have to bring up my boy Pyotr Kochetkov right now, Steven. There's no young goalie that I'm more excited about. There's no goalie that has been more fun to watch than him as of late in the league. So I wonder what you think his ceiling is going forward, and how would you compare him in a keeper league to a guy like Devon Levi or maybe even a Jeremy Swayman?
I think, you know, right now that feels like there's a easier path for Kochetkov to be that number one. Because of Swayman, you know, I can't imagine the Bruins wanted to move on from Ullmark. But when it comes to, and with Levi, it's just, he's still young. He doesn't have a ton of pro experience at this point. With Kochetkov, you know, I swear we've been talking about him being a rookie now for like half a decade because of, you know, last year and the chances before then. Yeah. But every time he comes up, he shows something that's impressive. And I think you look at his save percentage now, his surface save percentage at .911. It was not long ago that it was a .903. But, you know, he's been playing really good down the recently. He shut out the Canadians. He had a solid effort against the Capitals last week. And then it was Boston. He played pretty good. You know, with Carolina, they got a good defensive system where a lot of times he only has to make, you know, 20, 25 saves. But then you get those games where he's facing 40 shots like he did against Toronto. And I thought he looked good there. And he's looked good against these non-playoff teams down the stretch to the point where, you know, I thought they could have easily moved on from someone like Freddie Anderson or Antti Raanta last summer and just said, let's go with Kochetkov. We sign him to this multi-year deal. We believe in him. It was asking a lot for a guy who was still a rookie to be that number one, but I think he's going to be in 35 wins a couple years down the line. And again, not to say he's going to win the Vezina, but he should be in the conversation. I think someone with his size, his poise, and the way he moves in that net with a defensive system like that on a team that does have a lot of hope, he should be a guy that everyone's kind of looking at in fantasy next year.
Steven, wanted to ask you one goalie question. It was a fan question delivered by Skip. Someone's choosing between a bunch of options here. One is an established one in Sorokin, who hasn't been playing much lately down the stretch in favor of Patrick Waugh's boy, Semyon Varlamov, who's lighting it up right now. He's red hot. So the question is, Sorokin, keep him, or invest in one of these young guys that's available on the waiver wire that could anticipate the breakout? There's Wallstedt available, Askarov, who you touched on, and Ivan Fedotov, who's getting a couple of starts here for Philly down the stretch and not looking too good.
That's a very difficult one because I still, when it comes to goaltending, you're asking a lot for a young guy to kind of come in and be good right away. With Sorokin, you know, hasn't played as much maybe as a lot of owners, myself included, have probably hoped. But I think the thing you're looking at there is he's still got that pedigree. I would still trust him more in a must-win situation than Varlamov, at least, you know, down the stretch. Varlamov's going to be a little bit like, how many more good years are we going to see of him that he could play 30, 40 games? I'm not sure there's that many of those years left. Well, Sorokin, you know, I still expect him to be in that Vezina candidate conversation the next couple of years. So I'd be picking him just because he's still more of a known quantity. I like Fedotov out of Florida, but I'm not sure he's the number one next year. So that's the thing, you know, Samuel Erson, the stats might not be great, but he's had to do a lot of heavy lifting kind of in an unfavorable situation in Philadelphia this year. So I think in Sorokin still feels like the good choice, at least for next year. But Jesper Wallstedt's the best goalie prospect in the NHL right now. He just needs that clear path to making that work there in Minnesota to be that number one. But once he's that guy, and he's the reason I'm in the finals in my league right now. So I got to thank him for that, because his shutout against Chicago gave me like the 3 points I needed basically to move on to the next round, where I am currently losing. I will say that I'd be picking Sorokin. It feels safer right now in a position where there's not much safety.
Steven, I feel like this player is a player that everyone forgets how young he is because of how long he's been around, and that's Mikhail Sergachev. And I wonder what you think about him heading into next year in Keeper League specifically, because the worst injury luck you've ever seen this season for him. I had really high hopes this season that he would overtake Victor Hedman and be that go-to guy in Tampa, and we saw how Tampa's rallied as of late. But these injuries, man, what do you think about him heading into next year?
Yeah, it's been terrible luck. And I think, you know, if you look at the one thing that Tampa maybe has as a concern heading into the playoffs, is that maybe they aren't as defensively sound as some of these other teams. You know, Victor Hedman isn't the Victor Hedman of 5 years ago right now. With Sergachev, he was playing pretty well before that injury. And then last year obviously was his best season statistically in the NHL. I think, you know, when he's healthy, he should be able to put 55 points up a season, and that's valuable. He's not afraid to get physical. You know, we saw the last couple of years, he took a lot more penalty minutes, but he was being trusted more in physical situations. He was being more willing to land a big hit, and he's, because he's positionally more sound now than he's ever been. A lot of potential here. And yeah, you mentioned, you know, he's only 25. He's kind of like, he's not hitting his prime yet. He's still got a lot of good years here. As long as he stays healthy, I think that fantasy owners could take advantage of the fact he hasn't played a lot this year, and they were not, you know, minor injuries by any means. I think that could catch other fantasy owners off guard, and someone might be able to take advantage of picking Sergachev a bit later than he probably would have if he hit 60, 70 points this year. So we'll have to see how he performs after being fully healthy for next season, but it's still a Tampa Bay Lightning player, and we still expect big things from the Tampa Bay Lightning, and he's going to get a lot of that ice time. He's going to get a lot of those opportunities, especially as Hedman maybe isn't as offensive as he used to be. So I'd say target him for next year.
I would say I'm prepped for the off season and next year. Stephen, can't thank you enough for your time today. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Once again, head on over to dailyfaceoff.com and check out Stephen's latest on the upcoming NHL draft. Pete, I got a very interesting question before we came on air today. Draisaitl or Bedard, who would you keep?
That's interesting. So Draisaitl, I was looking, he's going to be in a contract year next year, and this is that, you know, ripple effect, and, you know, in terms of McDavid, the following year is going to be a UFA. So hopefully we see that whole crew in Edmonton, including Evan Bouchard, together for a while. But the harsh reality may be that Draisaitl may only play one more season in Edmonton. I'm not sure where he's going to go, but I would probably keep Connor Bedard over Draisaitl long term, just because I don't know that Draisaitl is going to still be playing with McDavid past next season.
I'm taking the opposite stance on this. I think I got to go with Draisaitl at the moment. If we're looking for the next like 2 to 3 seasons, we're going to see peak Connor Bedard in 3 years. It's not going to happen next year. Chicago really doesn't have the assets, and Draisaitl's proven himself as a player way beyond. So that's an easy answer for me.
Yeah, I would go with Draisaitl as well. I think important factor, and I think he's 2 years away from UFA, so after next year, he's eligible to sign a new contract. Translation, he's going to score like 65 goals next season. Count it, book it, and anybody playing around the area of Connor McDavid, I'm down with. I think Edmonton's a scary, scary team for the next couple of years included, and that would be my answer. I think Chicago, there's going to be some pain there, Pete.
There will be, for sure, but I liked Steven's take on the matter. He also was touching on kind of ranking the Hughes brothers. I wanted to get your take on that. I think you can make a case for any of the three. Quinn was the best in fantasy this year, but like Steven said, Anna, he may not even be the best Hughes brother at his position come 2-3 years from now. I would go Jack Hughes for next season. I think if he stays healthy, Devils bounce back, and he scores like, you know, 120 points or something like that. We know the ceiling's there for that.
I would go, you know, I'm going to go with my boy from a gym in Oakville that trained the Hughes brothers a long, long time ago, my boy Dan. A long time ago, he told me the youngest Hughes brother was going to be the best Hughes brother in the NHL. So I'm going to go with Luke. I would say in 5 to 7 years, he'll be above Quinn. He'll be a top three defenseman in the league. I think all three players are exceptional, but I'm gonna go off the board. I'm gonna go with Luke Hughes.
So I guess I'll go with Jack. That's the one that's left. There we go, giving everyone a little bit of credit. I think that for the next coming years, Jack Hughes is definitely going to be the more valuable one. Quinn's up there, though, in terms of position. Really, the season he had this year is phenomenal, and I could see both of them just fighting neck and neck. In the long run, though, Luke has shown his upside with the Devils. I just wonder what this organization's going to look like in 5 years when Luke Hughes is at his peak. I don't know that.
Yeah, there's a lot of moving parts, I would say, to Jersey in terms of how they do business moving forward. The whole Dougie Hamilton factor, I think, is something I wanted to get to with Steven. We didn't. How does that play into the fantasy value of Luke Hughes next season is my question. But no doubt those Hughes brothers, man, oh, man, they're really, really good. And there's going to be an All-Star weekend where all three Hughes brothers are there for the respective squads. Who stood out for you in fantasy hockey this season? It's time for your Keeper of the Year, brought to you by Skip, the official food delivery app of the NHL. Who do you have, Pete?
I'll go Evan Bouchard. I mean, I was high on him in the preseason, but you were kind of just waiting for him to really hit that full-fledged breakout. I know producer Bobby said he could hit 100 points further down the line. I firmly believe that, but this guy has lived up to and exceeded his ADP, which I think was like in the 50s or 60s overall. He is the most valuable defenseman in fantasy this season, and at least for another two seasons or season or two, he will have McDavid and or Draisaitl. So I would definitely keep him without any question in the world heading forward.
I got to go with Matt Boldy. Even though the Minnesota Wild aren't going to make the postseason this year, we haven't talked enough about the season Matt Boldy's had. Back-to-back 60-point seasons. He missed some times. He should have been a 30-goal scorer as well this year. Might still happen. He's at 27. The kid's only 23. The sky's the limit. He's going to be a very, very elite player in the NHL.
I'm going to go with Wyatt Johnston of the Dallas Stars. I mean, so many weapons up and down that lineup, but he sort of came out of nowhere this year and averaging over or a point per game since January 1st. That's 44 games, 23 goals, 21 assists. So that's my keeper of the year right there, Wyatt Johnston. Those are our keepers of the year brought to you by Skip, the official food delivery app of the NHL, Pete.
And, yeah, I wanted to also revisit from the draft last year a keeper debate, 2 and 3, Leo Carlson versus Adam Fantilli. I think two really underrated young cores when you look at the guys who are playing already and also the guys that will join or rejoin the mix, Anna, moving forward. Fantilli was great when healthy this season, and he has guys like Marchenko and Chinakov and Voronkov. I mean, like a lot of good young guns in Columbus. And then low-key, I feel like when healthy, McTavish in Anaheim was outstanding this year. Nobody's really talking about him, so he supports the young core, of course, with Leo Carlson. Who do you like better, Leo Carlson and Anaheim or Columbus with Fantilli?
I feel like this is a toss-up, but I'm going to go just slightly Adam Fantilli in Columbus. That team surprises me. You know, when you're looking up and down the lineup, they have some key pieces that you mentioned, Cole Sillinger as well, and you see that they have these young players that have proven themselves despite not being playing in the best environment this season, and the support that Fantilli has in Columbus in the near future, I think, is a little bit more than Carlson has in Anaheim, but it's really a toss-up, Nick.
It is. Give me Leo Carlson, though. I don't know what's going to happen in Columbus this offseason. They need a new GM, obviously, and I think they're going to shift the deck chairs around. It's just not working. There's going to be a goaltending change. Like I that's the one team I'm looking at in the offseason. It's like, what direction are you headed? And maybe it's something massive with that franchise. And I think you look at Anaheim conversely. I do think slowly but surely they're on the way up, and I think they're going to add and add and add. It started, obviously, last offseason with Alex Killorn. They're accruing draft picks and stuff like that. So I think I would side with the Anaheim Ducks and Leo Carlson. I think there's the higher ceiling there because I just don't know what's going on, Pete, in Columbus right now.
No, for sure. There are concerns with both of those teams entering next season. And I wanted to give a shout-out to a couple other players that really impressed me in keeper and dynasty leagues this season. J.J. Paterka in terms of the goal scoring. Brock Faber, who we talked about, you could debate him versus Luke Hughes all day for next season and probably lean with Brock Faber. Also, Noah Dobson. We talk so much about the Islanders not having a great long-term trajectory, but Noah Dobson was a top five, top 10 fantasy defenseman, bar none, this season.
Very true. And so I think you're all set, folks, everybody listening right now, for your prospects, your keepers, everything moving forward, whether you have to make a proclamation or decision right now or wait till the summer or into early next season. I think you're covered. So many thanks to Stephen Ellis from Daily Faceoff, everybody involved in this, producer Bob Bender. Great job as per usual. Enjoy the Masters. For Pete Jensen and Anadua, I'm Nick Alberga. You've been listening to NHL Fantasy on Ice, delivered by Skip, the official food delivery app of the NHL.